I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Even if you've never heard of Tom McDonnell, chances are you're familiar with the impact he and his company, DST Systems, have had on Kansas City. This hour, reporter Kevin Collison talks with us about McDonnell's retirement, as well as the latest Kansas City area business development news. We'll check in with Cerner's Village West project, figure out what the sale of EEG means for the Sprint Center, and look at the potential overhaul of Kansas City's economic development machine. Some ideas to grow on Up to Date, after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Kevin Collison of the Star began his recent look at the impact that Tom McDonnell has had on Kansas City by saying that if the 1930s was Tom's Town, as in Pendergast, since the early 1990s, it's been Tom's Town, as in McDonnell. What? You've never heard of Tom McDonnell? Just stay with us. Today we'll also talk about the latest in the economic development wars between Missouri and Kansas, the latest with the Cerner Corporation speeding up construction of its big project out at Village West by the Kansas Speedway, and what the potential sale of AEG means for the Sprint Center downtown. Back with us again is Kevin Collison, who covers all things development for the Kansas City Star. Kevin, how are you?
Oh, great. Happy to be here.
Well, now the name Tom McDonnell is not a household name around town, and yet you've compared him to none other than the legendary Tom Pendergast. How so?
Well, Tom Pendergast obviously had a lot to do with the history of Kansas City in a variety of ways, but the way I know him since I cover development is that he was very instrumental in some of the big projects that were built during the 1930s to help keep people working during the Depression, including City Hall,
sure.
County Courthouse, Municipal Auditorium. Really put a stamp on Kansas City's identity, at least downtown, I should say, during the 30s. Well, McDonnell has been CEO of DST Systems, which is a very, very well-performing software company. They developed software for financial services company, and they grew quite strongly during the 80s, 90s. They were a spinoff from Kansas City Southern. But he also was very involved with a subsidiary called DST Realty. And they, over the past 20-odd years, have done a tremendous amount of work to keep particularly the west side of the Central Business District vibrant and healthy.
How did Tom McDonnell, Kevin, whose company sort of focuses on mutual funds and keeping things in an orderly manner with mutual funds, how did he get involved in downtown development? The two don't seem to be connected, at least from 30 feet away.
Well, he... you know, the company was growing quite quickly. They had a great formula for success, so they needed space for their new employees. Rather than farm that work out to another developer, they created a subsidiary, and I may be a little off on the timing on this, but the bottom line is they decided to develop their own properties to house their growing operations, and also they encouraged other companies to come into downtown. So basically, they started off by redeveloping a building on Broadway back around 1990 into offices. Then they continued as the company grew to either build new office buildings or to renovate historic office buildings. They created a tax increment financing district around 1992 to channel some of the new tax revenues generated by those projects into improving the streetscape along Broadway and 11th Street. Also, they created a fund to help other businesses upgrade their facades and other infrastructure. So really, over a 20-year period between their, you know, and he worked with a gentleman named Phil Kirk, who's very, very well known here in town. He was the chairman of DST Realty until
sure.
he retired. And they also had a lot of financial support from Michael Merriman and the Merriman family of Financial Holding Corp, who is probably one of the most low-profile, wealthy movers and shakers in Kansas City. And so they quietly invested. DST put money into it. And it's what I would call enlightened self-interest, in which they have created office space for themselves at the same time improving the value of the area around them. So during a time period when downtown really needed some champions. These folks did a lot to keep the west side of downtown in a pretty good situation.
We're visiting with Kevin Collison from The Star about the career of Tom McDonald, who had such an impact on downtown Kansas City. Give us a sense. I mean, he clearly must have had some interest in development as almost a hobby of his. I mean, that's the sense you get from him.
Well, he's very reclusive.
Very reclusive.
I would love to have that kind of a nice chat with him.
I would love to have him in here sometime.
It would be a great interview. Obviously, there's a love and a passion there for doing the real estate. He's also, you know, a native of Kansas City. I'm sure, you know, he's one of the things that was interesting. Phil Kirk told me was that both he and McDonald cut their teeth as young executives for a guy named Bill Doremus, who was the head of Kansas City Southern.
Right.
And Phil was telling me that, you know, Mr. Doremus. And this is almost kind of like almost a bygone era, unfortunately, encouraged his executives to be very engaged in the community beyond just their work for the company. So that kind of civic-minded spirit was something that these guys, that was part of what they were expected. And again, that's representative of a generation of business leadership that unfortunately the concern is, and one of the reasons Mr. McDonald is leaving DST is that shareholders are putting more pressure on, apparently, for the company to focus more on its core business. You know, if you're a shareholder out in California who actually there is somebody who's become quite influential in DST affairs, you know, the idea of that kind of noblesse oblige for the community that the corporation is in is kind of almost a quaint concept anymore. They just want to know what you're doing to return to the shareholders.
The times have been a change, and that's for sure. What part of downtown, Kevin, did Tom McDonald tend to focus on?
Well, he was basically focused, you know, on the west side. And I don't know. We don't know yet whether DST will change course. Although that certainly seems to be the implication here. But he also was very involved in some other major deals. He would be the first person to say this, just not, you know, he worked through other people, but he gave them that backing they needed to do this. But they helped acquire a lot of properties in the Central Business District where the Power and Light District and the Sprint Center were built. For many years, Stan Durwood, for example, had been pushing this Power and Light District idea, but he never really did much to actually acquire the land that was needed. And when you're doing major redevelopment in a congested urban area like downtown, you need to be able to assemble a lot of different properties from a lot of different owners. And if you can't do that, you really can't get a project built of the scale that they were talking about. So McDonald, through DST, they actually helped the city quietly assemble the properties. They basically were stocking horse, buying land up, and then they ended up selling it back to the city for the amount that they paid for. So that really paved the way to do the Power and Light District and the Sprint Center. And then one other quick thing, another huge project they did was the Internal Revenue Service Processing Center down on West Pershing. Across from Union Station. And again, this was part of kind of a very sophisticated approach where not only did they bring in all these jobs for the IRS, redevelop the old main post office, build this new project for the IRS, but they also, as part of this deal, put together another tax increment financing district, which also built a parking garage that helped Union Station and also helped they moved the post office into Union Station, which helped bring them rent. So it's a very fascinating blend of both, you know, they made money off this. Don't get me wrong. These are certainly for-profit ventures, but there was also some great ripple effect benefits to other public endeavors.
So does downtown Kansas City still have someone like Tom McDonald who can help the city out when, you know, push comes to shove and there's another Sprint Center type of project that comes down the road and the city needs a little help from someone to quietly assemble properties?
Boy, I'd be hard-pressed to think of somebody that will be stepping into Tom McDonald's role. Again, and nobody's saying that McDonald's going to disappear from the scene, you know, and the fact that Mr. Merriman, who I've never met another, you know, again, like I said, somebody that's very much behind the scenes. There may be still potential, but I think the heyday when DST was growing and all these companies were coming in and all these employees were growing, that kind of fueled that big burst of activity in the 90s and early 21st century, that seems to have run its course. But again, you know, McDonald may find other places where his talents in helping to assemble properties and other types of endeavors might still move forward. We just don't know yet.
Again, our guest is Kevin Collison from the Kansas City Star. But, Tom, you know, he didn't always get his way, Tom McDonnell. One of his biggest disappointments, Kevin, was the failure a few years ago to persuade the Royals to come downtown, the Kansas City Royals. He couldn't get that done. A lot of folks wanted the downtown baseball park. Why couldn't he that done?
Well, you know, having been very closely involved in covering the whole discussion about trying to get the Royals to come downtown.
And they should have come downtown.
And believe me, over the years we've all – but the point was that the Royals were saying, hey, look, you know, somebody show us how it can be done, how we can make money off of it, how this thing can actually work. And they finally actually, you know, after a lot of tap dancing, the Royals did say, okay, we'll give you, meaning the downtown council, 100 days to come up with a solution. McDonald jumped on it. Mark Ernst, who at that point was the head of H&R Block, they all got some very heavyweight corporate people, got together, came up with at least a plan to build a stadium downtown, started lining up sponsors for corporate suites and all these other kinds of things that are the major money makers, and really were actually making some very serious progress on coming up with a tangible proposal.
And then the Royals pulled the plug.
Then Glass just got cold feet. And they didn't even – I can't remember how many days before they said, no, we're not going to do anything. We're just going to stay at the Truman Sports Complex. But pulled the rug out from underneath this whole effort far before that 100-day deadline was even close. And so that was certainly a disappointment. And, again, I think you and I both share this, and I think a lot of people out there do, that – that downtown ballpark would have been a tremendous boon to redevelopment in downtown.
Wow. Yeah. At least David Glass did come out today and say he's interested in ponying up some money for some starting pitching, which the team desperately needs. So a little glimmer of hope for Royals fans down the road here.
Wherever they play.
Yeah. Hey, how did Tom McDonnell operate? Do you have any feel for how he went about doing what he did?
Well, very quietly.
Very quietly.
Again,
yeah.
You know, as a reporter, it was extremely frustrating. I mean, I would hear about his involvement in a lot of different things downtown. And he, again, I'm talking about DST Realty, but he obviously was the major force pushing it. But he's not a very public figure.
Have you met him before?
Oh, I've met him. I mean, he's a decent guy, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But he's just extremely quiet and very low profile. And believe me, you know, there are many people in this community that are major players in our city that really don't like, you know, I talked to you, I think last time I was here, we were talking about Cecil Van Tile, who took over the West Edge project and a variety of other things. And I'm telling you, you know, he's another extremely low profile individual who just loathes being in the press. And it's frustrating for a reporter. But at the end of the day, you know, there's some great stories about some of the things these gentlemen and, you know, there are some women out there who are doing.
I think when I make my millions, I'm going to go low-key, too, and,
okay,
like, not
good.
Talk to
you
people like
you.
You
and I can both be in the same man cave.
Again, we're visiting with Kevin Collison from the Kansas City Star about the latest development issues around the Kansas City area. There's a lot of talk these days about a new super board that will oversee development in Kansas City, Missouri. What's going on with that, Kevin?
Well, the Economic Development Corporation of Kansas City is the umbrella organization for all the various development incentive groups. There's the TIF Commission, there's the Planned Industrial Expansion Authority, the PIA. It's kind of an alphabet soup. And these are all different incentive programs that were established over the past 20, 30 years. They're administered by the EDC. There has been a lot of grumbling that they are not as efficient as they should be. They're not as proactive as they should be, that they only react to development requests. They're not trying to define where we want to see development occur in the city. You know, Mayor Funkhauser tried mightily during his 4 years to basically scuttle the organization and bring it back into City Hall. Now Sly James has picked up the mantle. It's not quite as in your face as Mr. Funkhauser was, but he certainly wants to change. So this all actually got started during the last months of the Funkhauser administration. There was a major, a study of sorts done.
And right now there's like seven?
Seven different agencies. Again, the TIF Commission, the LCRA.
And the mayor wants to combine all these.
He doesn't. Right now what they want to do is they want to create a super board that would sit on each of these different agencies, so there would be kind of a continuity with just the one board managing the different agencies.
So the same board with all these different agencies.
Same board, but all the different agencies. This is a recommendation that came from an organization called Market Street that the city hired a year ago to take a look at all this. The number 15 was basically the fact that the largest organization, as far as board goes, is the Plan Industrial Expansion Authority, the PIA. They have, I believe, 14, 15 members. I should know this, but I don't off the top of my head. So they kind of said, okay, let's take a look at what the minimum requirements are we have to have for each one of these boards, and they came up with this number 15.
15 board members on the super
board committee
you're talking
on this super
about.
Board.
That's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people, and it's also a lot of people are questioning whether people would have that kind of time to be able to devote to administering all these different organizations. I mean, right now, it's a very, very time-consuming thing to be a member of just one of these boards.
Do we need to have all these different agencies?
Well,
why not combine the agencies?
Well, that is also one of the suggestions that are being made, but that would require state legislation because, again, all these different programs were established at different times. One of them administers, for example, the PIA. Their major tool is property tax abatements. The TIF Commission works with tax increment financing. The IDA, the Industrial Development Agency, works primarily with industrial revenue bonds. They all have different incentive tools.
But they have a related purpose, though.
Well,
clearly.
Their purpose is to promote economic
business,
development
yeah.
in the city of Kansas City. And personally, I think, you know, I was watching these agencies. I've been covering these agencies for years now. If you've got good people on them and if you have good direction from City Hall about what you like and what you don't, because ultimately the City Council still has the final say on many of these incentives. I mean, at the end of the day, most of these boards are advisory groups. The City Council has the final vote.
Mm.
So I think, you know, yes, does it need some reform? Sure. Do they want to keep developers from shopping between different agencies to see who gets the best deal? Sure. But I do think, really, if you got the right people and the right political motivation at City Hall, you really don't have to go through this. But and also, I mean, the staff of the EDC, you know, this has been 6-7 years now where people have been talking about how we got to change the EDC, how we got to throw these people out, we got to do this. I think that, you know, it would be very difficult to do your job with that kind of criticism going on for so long.
So it's not clear if all these boards are going to merge or if, in fact, there's going to be this new super board overseeing all these different groups.
They have the Advance KC, which is this initiative. They had a meeting of their steering committee a couple of weeks ago. They say they want to try to get this super board online by December, which is not very long from now. It came out that really, again, there had not been a lot of direct communication yet with the people who would be directly affected. And the follow-up is that they would like, if they get this board going, to also eventually introduce legislation in Jeff City to try to create this super board or this super development agency.
Yeah.
And, of course, this is all in the backdrop of the continuing competition between the city and Johnson County, you know, with Kansas certainly supporting it. A lot of people said, hey, who's going to start making the call? The first person that says, no, we're not going to compete to keep a particular business here, there's going to be a lot of political fallout.
Yeah.
So it's been a ongoing festering sore for at least five or six years, and it continues.
We're talking Eco Devo Economic Development with the Stars, Kevin Collison. If you want to join our conversation, as always, you're welcome to do so. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. UpToDate at kcur.org is our email address. You can also go to KCUR's Facebook page. You know, every time you come on, we talk about this, Kevin. That is these economic development wars between Missouri and Kansas, the big border war that never seems to go away. Just recently, you wrote about a company, Larson Binkley Engineering, which is relocating from Johnson County to the Crossroads area of downtown Kansas City. This involves like 40 jobs. But then you also wrote a couple of weeks ago about a company called Hantover Inc., which is moving from Kansas City to Overland Park, just the opposite way, bringing 91 employees and the promise of an additional 40 jobs over the next 5 years. Is these border conflicts, is it ever going to stop?
Well, right now, you know, the mayor's theory is that if both sides bloody their nose enough, they'll finally say enough. But, you know, it doesn't show any sign of letting up. There doesn't seem to be any interest, particularly in Kansas, to declare the moratorium that some of the executive on the both sides of the border asked for a couple of years ago. Before I came over, I did a little total over the past 3 years, and these are just the larger companies that have moved back and forth.
Right.
We've had almost 1,900 jobs move from Kansas to Missouri, and we've had almost 2,200 jobs move from Kansas or from
Missouri to Kansas.
Yeah. The biggest one was actually last month in August, a company called Freightquote announced that it was going to relocate from Lenexa to Kansas City and bring 1,200 jobs with it. What's interesting is the companies are just, you know, this is completely, I can certainly understand if I have a company and I'm having a state telling me if you move just a couple of miles down, particularly I-435, I'll allow you to keep all your employee withholding taxes for the next 5 to 10 years. I mean, it's a no-brainer for some of these guys, and that's what's happened with many of these companies. They're essentially just kind of shuffling back and forth along the I-435 corridor, and it's really no sweat for their employees or their executives to just kind of change their driving habits by a couple of miles. Now, you know, again, and you know, I've always been a big, you know, in my heart, I love to write about how the urban core is being redeveloped. The interesting thing, the one that you mentioned, the Larson Binkley, they are actually moving from a, you know, your normal looking corporate office park in Overland Park to an historic building in downtown Kansas City in the Crossroads area,
which is quite a cultural shift for a company.
And they're saying that they like to do that because of the creative environment that's starting to take hold. And I just this morning when I was driving into work went by the old Hanna Rubber building, which is now being renovated to be the new home for Sporting Innovations, which is this company that the Sporting Kansas City folks have come up with to develop software to help make going to games more fun.
Right.
So, you know, there is definitely there seems to be more than just a lot of hot air associated with the fact that we are starting to see a bit of a creative culture that's attracting some of these companies that want to have these younger adults that like that urban environment. But most of these other companies, it's just shuffling back and forth along the I-435.
And every company is getting some kind of incentive to make the
jump. Oh, all of them are getting incentives, yeah. And
God, just amazing to me. So, and you're also sort of suggesting here that by and large, this is going against conventional wisdom, which I think suggests that Kansas has been winning this battle. You're saying, given a couple hundred jobs, it's roughly even.
It's pretty even. You know, the Lenex or the freight quote deal was the big catch in terms of numbers. Now, I would be willing to venture that some of the other companies that have moved probably pay their people more. They're probably more highly valued as far as per employee. But when it came to sheer numbers, if you're looking at this as like a football game, you know, the Missouri side of the metro scored a big one with the freight quote deal. But again, the point is that none of this stuff helps the overall metro economy. I mean, it's just moving people back
amazing.
And forth. And what we're really needing is to get, you know, is to have companies like a Cerner that's growing either here in town or we bring in some new companies from outside the region. We haven't had a lot of announcements in the past few years about larger employees coming in from outside the area. We've had some good news. Again, Cerner, you know, is building this new campus out at the
Village
West. That's
because it's a homegrown company.
It's a homegrown company that's tapped into the huge investments being made in electronic medical records and software associated with healthcare.
But you're
delivery.
Saying the company's coming from outside the metro.
Well, they bring in new people. They bring
but
in new
that's
wealth.
Not happening.
That's
you're
just
saying.
Not that I'm seeing. I have not written a story for a while about a significant new employer coming in from outside the region that's actually bringing in new wealth, new investment, and perhaps you know new people to you know buy homes and go shopping and everything else that economic development is supposed to lead to.
Yeah, okay. Again, our phone number 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Our email address is updatedate@kcur.org. You know, the Cerner Corporation, different topic here. You mentioned Cerner speeding up construction of its 660,000 square foot office campus out in western Wyandotte County. It expects to finish the project about 18 months ahead of schedule. Why is Cerner pushing ahead as much as it is these days, Kevin?
Well, again, the what's fueling Cerner's growth is just you know their business is just booming. I mean, you could compare them maybe to the DST of
healthcare
the 1990s.
Healthcare reform is good to them. Yeah,
you know, Mr. Patterson, Neil Patterson, just made the Forbes list of the 400 most wealthy people in the United States. I think his value now is $1.1 billion and change. That company is well positioned to take advantage of the healthcare reform. The buildings that are going up at Village West, which is close to the Speedway, were part of the bigger deal that occurred a couple of years ago.
Using these Kansas Star Bonds.
Using Star Bonds. It was essentially just a quick rehash. Cerner, the executives Neil Patterson and Cliff Illig, also are co-owners of Sporting Kansas City. They wanted to have a new stadium for their soccer club. They tried to get a deal with the city of Kansas City over at the site of the old Bannister Mall. Ultimately, that deal could not gel. The folks out in western Wyandotte County said, hey, look, The star bonds out here are the sales tax revenues that are being generated by the companies like Nebraska Furniture Mart, et cetera, doing great. We're going to pay off the bonds that were issued for the original Village West project sooner than we expected. Basically got an agreement with the state of Kansas to extend that payout, built a stadium for Sporting Kansas City, and part of the deal was Cerner said, we will bring 4,000 new jobs out here.
And so how's that going? Are they going to bring
the
jobs?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's what's the buildings that are going up. They originally were going to be staggered and finished in the middle of 2015. They decided, hey, rather than just build one building and then send all our construction crews home for a year or so, we could save some money by just keeping people there. And so they've decided to just go ahead and build the second building that's part of this. It's 2 9-story towers. Well, towers, relatively speaking, but when you're out in Western Wyandotte County, nine stories
like
is probably
tower.
A tower.
Yeah.
And anyway, so they just decided, what the heck, let's just keep the crews working. And so now they're going to get this deal done well ahead of schedule, a year and a half ahead of when they originally promised the folks at the unified government. And I don't know how that's going to affect their hiring rate, but they do expect fully to honor that commitment to put 4,000 warm bodies out there working.
We're talking with Kevin Collison from The Star about development. Let's go to some phone calls before a break here. Again, our number 816-235-2888. You can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. Jason from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to share, well, I'm from Missouri, and I lived in Portland, Oregon for a couple of years, and they had a city center square, but it was unlike ours, where I would call ours like an indoor food court type deal. This was actually a city block, and it was all brick. It was a public space, and even companies and citizens would donate money to get their name stamped on a brick to build the thing. And they had hired security to go around on bikes to kind of, you know, keep the peace. And then there was a TV station that had resided underneath it, kind of, and it was also a tourist spot. And it seemed like just the heart of the city, kind of very, a lot of activity. It brought a lot of jobs. And so I kind of, personally, I'd like to see some kind of public space in our downtown core. And just kind of wanted to share that idea. It seemed like a positive thing.
Yeah, Jason, thank you. Don't we have some public spaces in downtown? I'm thinking of Barney Ellis Plaza.
Which is definitely not as well used as Jason's mentioned about
Portland.
You may describe the Power and Light District as a glorified food court, but, I mean, it is kind of the equivalent of a town square. The enclosed courtyard there at the center of the live block. Ilis Davis Park was developed to be that kind of center, although, again,
it's pretty empty.
Portland's probably
there.
Doing a lot more to program those spaces. I mean, it's one thing to create space. I mean, you got a Barney Ellis Plaza. You got the Power and Light District Center Court, or, you know, Kansas City Live Block. You've got Ilis Davis. You got Washington Park. There hasn't been the programming that some of the other cities have done to bring people in,
music,
that kind of stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of research that talks about, you know, how do you create a good place, a public place, and we've got, I think, you know, I've always had a bit of a debate with some folks who say we need more green space downtown. Well, we've got some great green space downtown. It's just not very well utilized.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, hey, the City Market in downtown Kansas City, I would compare it with any public space in America on a Saturday morning. Now, maybe
wonderful.
On other days of the week, it's not quite that busy. But, you know, we've got some great public spaces here. It's just a matter of do we have folks who are out there helping to program them and bring activity in that brings people in.
Jason, thanks for the call. Again, our number 816-235-2888. Let's go to Al from Kansas City, Missouri. Al, you're on the program. Good morning.
Good morning. Great program.
Thanks.
Just regarding that last call, I mean, I tell people about this city all the time and what an incredible place it is and how beautiful and, you know, and our public spaces are amazing. We do need to start using them, but that wasn't my reason for calling. You brought up something earlier, which I think is important to look at is why we are not attracting national corporations and companies to move here. Why? It just seems that we have this flyover. We kind of accepted this flyover mentality, and It's such a great place for people to live and move. Why is it we're not bringing these corporations in? Could you comment on that?
Yeah, thank you, Al. Good question.
Well, sure. I do know that, you know, the era of major corporate relocations is kind of gone. You know, like when Boeing moved from Seattle to Chicago, that was one of the last big time relocations. But, you know, why we have not been able to attract some of these investments, I wish I could tell you. I mean, we've got the organizations that are out there trying to recruit, you know, new companies to the area or encourage companies to expand in the area. I don't really have a great explanation because I agree.
Do you think there's any relationship to this? You know, we lost AMC, which wasn't a corridor issue. It was just smack dab in the middle of downtown, and we lost them to Overland Park. Is it the same mentality? We're just, like, not bringing people? Is there some – what do you think it is, quality of life? What is it?
Well, I certainly don't think it's the quality of life because I believe it. I mean, I'm a transplant here. I've lived here for 11 years. This is a great city. It's a wonderful place to live. And you've got – if you want to – you know, go anywhere in the country, you can be there in less than 2 hours by air out of KCI. It's hard to explain.
Let me throw this in, just to what, and Al raises such a good point here. There was a great interview this week on KC Currents with Mike Burke, who ran for mayor against Sly James, been very involved in development for so many years, in which Mike Burke says this: one thing I've learned in 40 years of economic development work is you don't go steal a Fortune 500 company from another city. You grow them in your own city. Hallmark is homegrown. Sprint is homegrown. DST is homegrown. And Cerner is certainly homegrown. We need to grow the businesses of the future here in Kansas City.
That's a great point. It's a very good point. And unfortunately, though, some of our major corporations here are actually – they're very mature, to put it politely. I mean, Hallmark is not a booming company anymore. You know, H&R Block has had its business model challenged over the past few years. I mean, the companies that are truly growing here are Cerner – and Garmin, and I think Garmin's actually having some challenges out there with their major vehicle. So we don't, you know, with the exception of Cerner and some of these small startup firms, and again, a lot of these companies that are creating the jobs are flying below the radar. I mean, we don't really hear that much about them. But, you know, I think the city's got a good strategy. And when I say the city, I mean Kansas City as a larger creature. I mean, I don't get into the Johnson County city stuff, although, you know, my heart's in the urban area. But I do think that we've got a good strategy of being a place that's affordable, of being a place that supports. You know, I think the Google thing will be fascinating to see if that can be translated into creating more jobs in the new technology. You know, but I do think that some of our old stalwart companies have, you know, they're having troubles these days, and they're not growing like they were 30, 40 years ago.
Let's take a break. Al, you got us stirred up. I appreciate the good phone call. We'll continue our conversation with Kevin Collison here in just a moment. We'll talk about AEG and how its big news will affect the Sprint Center going forward. And out in Lenexa, a company called Perceptive Software that's growing like gangbusters. We'll talk about that company as well. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. And welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. If you missed yesterday's Political Pundits Roundtable, you'll find it and all of our previous broadcasts at kcur.org. Tomorrow, some advice to help your grass and trees recover after this summer's hot, hot weather. And I hope if my wife's listening, she's watered again this morning. I watered early. She has to water at noon. Also, we'll learn who's playing nice in the digital sandbox. That's tomorrow on the program. This hour, we're visiting with Kevin Collison with the Kansas City Star. He covers development, and we're talking development here on the program today. Let's go to Dave from Kansas City, Missouri. Dave, you're on the program at 816-235-2888. Dave, good morning.
Good morning.
Fire away.
Hey, Kevin, I appreciate all the great reporting you do, and you've hit a couple really perfect things, such as the Kansas City not going for the downtown ballpark, which really would have completed that River Market to Crown Center corridor. And I spent a lot of time in the River Market area working as a businessman down there, and it seems like the city moves from project to project to project without really finishing, without really getting to the projects to a point of self-sufficiency or positive cash flow. And I'm just curious, you mentioned the Super Board and some other activities. What is the city doing from the standpoint of focusing on some of the projects we already have that have been here for a long time, such as 18th and Vine, City Market, River Market area, to really get those past the fact that it's a two-day-a-week market and the Blue Room and the 18th and Vine are busy a couple days a week? Any thoughts on that?
Well, I know the Downtown Council, has been a major, major force in trying to be that kind of comprehensive group that's trying to make things work. I mean, they actually got drafted a year or two ago to try to help make 18th and Vine a more vibrant, lively place. From my point of view, a couple of things I think the city needs to work on. They need to get the Power and Light District fully up and running. I mean, there's still way too much empty space in that development. It's still costing the city way too much in subsidies. It needs to become more self-sufficient, not only for the city taxpayers, but just to make it fulfill the promise it made of being, you know, this vibrant entertainment district.
Kevin, does Dave have a point, though? I mean, does the city sort of work on a project and then sort of move on before that project is sort of fully implemented and moving? I'm thinking of 18th and Vine. It's a great example. Union Station being an example where you made the big investment and then sort of our attention moves away and the thing struggles. 18th and Vine certainly has had its share of attention and then it's struggled for a number of years. Is there something to that?
Well, I wish I could give you guys a magical solution to 18th and Vine. I think it was developed. It happened before I moved to town with the best of intentions. But now whether or not it was the best idea at the end of the day for that kind of massive investment, I don't know. But we're in it. And I think people like the Downtown Council are trying to do.
Well, I love that area.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm a huge fan.
And they're trying to. But it is a bit. You and I were just chatting between, on the NPR broadcast that it's far from downtown. It's not something you can walk to if you're like kicking around downtown saying,
well,
hey, let's walk over to the Blue Room.
You wish can't. You could.
But I do think, I think our big problem just, again, it was really we had a four-year hole. I mean, we had a lot of momentum going on with Mayor Barnes and with the whole, South Loop project. And then we had 4 years of Mark Funkhauser in which everything just crawled to a halt. Mm. Now, Sly James is back on the scene. I think he's trying to help push that agenda that really started taking off at the beginning in 2001, 2002. Streetcar is a huge thing that he's pushing. I think that
is a big—
And it
appears to be coming ahead much better than I thought it was going to.
Yeah, they are looking for money under every sofa and rock.
And they're finding it.
And they're finding it, which is, interesting. But again, that will help. I think the connectivity thing has always been a big issue with our city. The streetcar won't go to the 18th and Vine, but it will knit together Crown Center with the Crossroads, with the Central Business District, with the River Market.
It's a start, as the mayor always says.
It's a big start. Yeah. Personally, I wish it was pushing all the way out Main to UMKC, because then I think you could really, really create that River Crown Plaza nexus that we've talked about. So I don't think it's a matter of the city going from project to project, and that we've got administrations at City Hall that are gangbusters 1 year, and then we get a whole different change. And when you see successful cities out there, and I'm always thinking about Denver, and I'm not trying to put – I know some people think, oh, he's always talking about Denver, Minneapolis. But what's gone on in those cities is you had a continuity where they – it's not just up to one mayor or one corporate leader like a Tom McDonald. Mm-hmm. It's like you've got – the torch gets passed from administration to administration, from corporate leader to corporate leader, that keep the city moving in one direction instead of like drastically changing courses every time somebody dies or you get a new mayor at City Hall.
Cynthia from Prairie Village, you're on the air, Cynthia.
Yes, I don't want to sound Pollyannish, but
go ahead. Sound like it, Cynthia. It's okay. You're among friends here.
And you're dating yourself with Pollyanna, believe me.
All right. I have a hang-up button here, okay?
So do I, Cynthia. Yeah.
No, but really, I think, Steve, you do a fantastic job on the weekend and review where you talk about great things to do in the city.
Yes.
I wish they could go one step further and provide, like, contrasting growth examples of businesses in the city, because if you speak positive about things, you attract other positive effort. And I think because you gentlemen are so involved in city growth, you think everyone has the same level of knowledge, and we really don't.
Mm.
And I'm hoping that maybe, like a visual opportunity to actually, the media can maybe put together a package of of a contrasting growth report of what's been fantastically well done well in the city. Because if you're focusing only on what has not been done, people forget what has been done. Sly James was a guest speaker at the Kansas City downtown, as he said that one thing he remembered great when he had an office downtown, you could skateboard downtown and hit no one, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Now that's not the case. That type of a casual statement should be taken to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And just say, these are the fantastic growth opportunities within the city, and put it in one consolidated report, audio, print, or visual.
Does the EDC already do that, Kevin?
Well, actually, and I'm sorry I didn't catch your name at the beginning of this, but you're hitting a nail.
Pollyanna.
Thanks, Polly. And believe me, I remember Pollyanna, too. But, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head. I've heard so many times people talking about, why aren't we marketing what's been going on downtown? Not only to people from outside Kansas City, but to people who live in Overland Park and Lee's Summit, who rarely come downtown. There's been a lot of talk. The EDC's talked about it. The Downtown Council's talked about it. The Convention and Visitors Association's talked about it. But, you know, it's been frustrating to me. I know there's some great videos out there that have been done showing just the kinds of things you're talking about. I know there's some very smart people who prepared some advertising-type materials promoting the kinds of things you're talking about. They've just not been able to work together to put together a concerted marketing advertising campaign to inform people. I do the best I can at the newspaper, but I hate to tell you this. I mean, you know, I recognize every day how, you know, my voice doesn't get too far as being a reporter. But we do the best we can.
Sure,
but
it
what
does.
You need is
yeah.
a concerted television, radio, online campaign to inform people about how much the urban core of Kansas City has changed over the past 10 years. And it frustrates me because I hear these people at meetings all the time saying, we need to do this, we need to do this, but they just have not been able to pull it together. And that is kind of sad because I think you're right.
Cynthia, thanks for the good call. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Yeah. Interesting follow-ups here from our conversation in the first half about, you know, the shuttling back and forth between Kansas and Missouri. Sean in Midtown emails us at uptodate@kcur.org. Don't forget to mention that all of this shuffling back and forth not only doesn't help the overall metro economy, it also sucks tax dollars out of our public institutions for what amounts to no net gain for anyone but the corporations and their shareholders. What do we get from new employees on the Kansas City, Missouri side if we give back all the withholding tax, some extra sales tax when they eat lunch? You know, good point.
He's right. No, and that's it, you're very, very correct in that. It just steps up the burden on everybody else to make up for the money that's pulled out of the system that goes to help these incentive deals.
Absolutely. And then a listener from Overland Park writes us this. So is it fair to say that since the job tally is roughly even, the only people to lose are the taxpayers who give breaks on both sides of the line for these companies to move back and forth? And I think the answer is
amen.
You bet it is. Yeah. I think that listener from Overland Park gets it pretty well. Becky from Parkville. Becky, you're on the air with Kevin Collison from the Kansas City Star. Good morning.
Hi. This is kind of a bounce off of the previous caller, Pollyanna. In regards to the political environment that's going on, if I'm looking at especially the Grandview Triangle and 435 in the south side, they've got a lot of healthcare-related fields.
Yeah.
Pharmaceutical research. If I'm one of those companies, can I really look to Missouri to expand when I'm looking at a representative like Todd Akin, who is so painfully uninformed? I mean, we have to look at who these companies are dealing with in regards to expansion.
Well, I think it's Becky, I appreciate that, but I think it's fair to say that the future is looking a little tough with the federal government pulling back.
Well, that's true,
money,
but she's
both
actually,
Democrats and Republicans.
Steve,
yeah.
I got to tell you, Becky's got something there because, you know, Stowers a few years ago had been talking about a major expansion of their research institution, but they did not want to do it in a state that was going to ban stem cell research.
That's true.
And they basically, you know, did get the amendment they wanted. They're still on pause. Now, I'm not quite sure what's going on there, but I do think that, you know, when Kansas City, which is straddling the border between Kansas and Missouri, is out there competing for some of these more cutting-edge type investments that involve some perhaps controversial type techniques, at least to some people, we are at a disadvantage compared to California or Massachusetts, where they can open these kinds of businesses and not worry yeah. that some legislator is going to try to impose their moral values on the kinds of work they do. It does leave some uncertainty out there.
Maybe I was talking about expanding light rail, for instance, down the road. If once we get the first starter line up and we need help extending it out to the plaza and to UMKC, the federal government and the state government in Jeff City probably won't have the kinds of resources it once had to help a city out like this. We're going to have to be doing it on our own, right?
Well, that remains. You're probably right, Steve. You know the political landscape far better than I. I mean, I do know that there is certainly federal money available. We've not been able to get our act together in the past, and maybe we missed that train, to use a lousy pun.
Yeah.
But that's why the streetcar thing, it's interesting to see, again, the mayor basically scratching and clawing and finding funding wherever he can. And a lot of this actually is federal money that the Mid-America Research Council has in their budget.
Right.
And, you know, but I'm not writing off the fact that I think a federal government down the road still may not be very engaged in these kinds of things.
Right.
But
that's
see how things play out.
That's what dealing with a deficit, that's what that translates to. Fewer resources for things like extending light rail projects, I think, going forward. Let's go to Ann from Raymore. Ann, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. I actually had a comment that was sort of connected with both of your last two callers about the silo problem, that everybody's so stuck on their own agenda that they're not cooperating for the promotion of the greater good and healthcare. Because I spent the weekend at a patient summit that was hosted on the Cerner campus, and we in that room we had patients, healthcare providers. Yeah, the tech and support side, but that's not consistently happening elsewhere. And we spent a lot of time talking about how do we take the energy that happens when you put everybody in one place with a common goal and translate that to multiple settings. Hmm. Sounds like exactly what we need with different municipalities.
Yeah. And thank you.
Yeah, and the Kansas City Area Development Council has some organizations that try to pull people together from various sectors to get them to talk to one another. I mean, I know one of their big pushes is what they call the Animal Health Corridor, which is, you know, it's a variation on the healthcare thing that you're talking about, where they're trying to promote this area. The Kansas Bioscience Authority is trying to pull people together on these fronts. I know there are people out there working on the kinds of things you're talking about. How visible they are, how effective they are, I can't tell you right now. But your points are very valid, and I know there are folks out there who are trying to create a synthesis. Again, whether that's being effective or not, I'm not 100% sure.
Greg emails us this at updatedatkcur.org. The poorest county in the entire state of Kansas, much less the metro, managed to provide a player like Cerner a great location. If Wyandotte County is lifted up, it can only help everyone. Stop the border war talk and stop trying to steal companies from one side of the state line or the other. Start looking at what will grow the whole. The best thing about Google coming is that it was originally a Kansas City, Kansas only project, and now it is KC Metro. That's the type of action we need. And then an elephant in the room question here from Maureen. How can we expect to attract national corporations and their employees' families to a city whose school system is still unaccredited? A good elephant in the room question, I guess.
It is.
That's what that was.
If you're asking me to address the problems of the
city school
district, it's still an issue. As we know, and I don't know how much time we have left, I mean, effectively, the city of Kansas City has created a parallel school district, parochial and charter schools. I mean, we basically, you can certainly live in the city and send your kids to public schools, but they're charter schools, which, it's not a good situation, but it's been how things have been worked out over the years, unfortunately, in the city.
But we hope progress is still being made. Yeah. Hey, just a couple minutes left. Let's run through some things quickly here that I still had on my list I wanted to ask you about. Just give me a couple sentences here. The big news with Sprint, there's a potential sale involving the Los Angeles-based Anschutz Entertainment Group. That's the company that manages and operates the Sprint Center. What impact would a sale have on the Sprint Center? Just briefly, Kevin.
Well, I've been told that the contract AEG has to operate operate the Sprint Center would not be affected if the company is sold. It's been a very successful venture for both AEG and the city. The city's made over $5 million off of revenue sharing. AEG, this has been one of the most profitable arenas in the country. And so I don't believe it would have any effect at all as far as Kansas City goes.
Out in Lenexa, Percepta Software is now building a 240,000-square-foot headquarters campus. This is at 89th Street Parkway and Renner Boulevard. How big a deal is this one, Kevin?
Well, for Lenexa, it's a very big deal because they have this project called the Lenexa City Center that's been struggling now for several years. The city's spent a lot of money, I think over $50 million building streets. It was going to be a kind of a mixed-use area with offices and residential, et cetera. It's just had a hell of a time, with the economy. So they've got a major tenant now to put in an office building out there on the for Shawnee, which is losing the company.
Yeah.
They're going to have a big empty building right now. So that's unfortunate. And it's, again, you know, this may not be quite as graphic as the cross-border stuff because these companies do need to expand. But, again, it's an incentive-driven deal.
Jeff from Overland Park wants to comment just on the point you made. Jeff, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, guys. You know, the Perceptive Software is a deal is a perfect example of everything that's wrong with economic development here that folks have talked about. There really is no development of the economy. You know, all those folks that work at Perceptive, you know, they're going to stay where they are. They're not going to move. The Perceptive's office now is, what, a mile north of the Lenexa border.
Yeah.
So those communities easily could have worked together to have found Perceptive the space that it needed. The area that it's located in is also a struggling development. Has plenty of open land, and it certainly seemed like it would have been much better for Johnson County as a community and the KC Metro as a community to keep Perceptive where it is and find a way to work together, even if that meant a little bit of revenue sharing between those two communities.
Jeff, thank you for the phone call. Just finally, Kevin, a new restaurant and movie theater concept involving a pair of former AMC Entertainment execs in the works for the Prairie Village Shopping Center. It includes a 200-seat restaurant and 380-seat theater auditoriums. Where's it going to be exactly? Do you know?
Well, there's the old Macy's Home Store in the Prairie Village Shopping Center has been empty now for quite a while. It's a fairly good sized space, so it's gonna the theater's gonna go in there, the restaurant's gonna go, and it's also the Einstein Brothers, and it's part of a redevelopment of all the older shopping centers in Northeast Johnson County that Lane 4 is doing right now, including Corinth and Prairie Village and Fairway.
It's a good location for guys like you and me.
For guys over 40 like you and me.
I'll see you at the movies.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that'll be what independent foreign films, the kind of films we talk about.
Well,
in this
program. Say it's going to be first run, but they're going to be geared towards older folks. I mean, they're saying it's a place that's, well, it's all relative, my friend.
Yes,
Pollyanna again.
That's Kevin Collison. He's the Stars Development Reporter. Kevin, always good to have you in here.
Thank
you.
It's always a pleasure.
You can learn more about our show at kcur.org. Tomorrow on the program, some advice to help your grass and trees recover after this summer's hot, hot weather. Also, we'll learn who's playing nice in the digital sandbox. Today's show is produced by Steven Steigman. I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and you are up to date.